Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hello everybody and welcome to the Saatkorn show. I'm super happy and as you can hear, I have an international guest. I'm super happy to have him on Saatkorn because he has a very interesting career, does very interesting things in areas of the world where I don't really have experience with. It's about Poland, it's about the Ukraine, and some of you might know who I'm talking about because he's quite famous in this area. And it's Czamek Gaczek, and he's the founder CEO of Grupa Pracuj. Welcome, Czamek. I'm super happy to have you on Saatkorn, and yeah, let's talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, Gero, nice to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation. And I very much look forward for our conversation.
Great. We start with you. How did you end up in this HR tech world?
I was studying actually in Poland. I was studying at the University of Warsaw. And after graduating, I went for 6 months to work in London. And while being in London, after 2 months, I knew that I'm not going to work in large organizations. I was, you know, trying to find out what would be my future. I just found the idea of, of the publications for students and graduates, as well as the website idea, the internet idea. That was early 2000. And then, you know, I came back to Poland, convince a few of my friends from the students' union that we should do something together. They were the only people who were not, you know, paid at that moment. So so this is the only people we could afford. And, you know, we started Pracuj.pl, which, you know, happened to transform into Grupa Pracuj and became quite a successful company over the years.
What a nice story. And there are some parallels to my own past, also early 2000. And then I found it super interesting to have this interface between HR technology, marketing, communication, people and culture topics, and this all in a more and more digital world. So it was really a fascinating journey for the last 25 years. And I guess it probably is the same for you, right?
Absolutely. I think so. I think we both, you know, faced the moment when the internet and digital world was being created initially by the early adopters. So that was really tough initially to sell anything because nobody knew what it is about. But then I think, you know, we both successfully kind of went on the wave of the changes and we are where we are.
Perhaps to the listeners here who don't know Grupa Pracuj, perhaps you can give a background. I know that you consist of two areas. It's a job classifieds on the one hand and HR software and technology on the other hand. Perhaps you can give us some information how many companies part of Grupa Pracuj and how your strategy unfolded in these two areas.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Grupa Pracuj, you know, we are, as I said, you know, we started in year 2000. We are right now a public company. We are listed since 4 years on the Warsaw Stock Exchange. We're one of the first unicorns when going public. You know, the company worth more than $1 billion or euro in Poland. We have two lines. So one of them would be the job classifieds. So, you know, in Germany, there is StepStone. I mean, every market has its own, let's say, job classified or job börse, as you say.
Yes.
So that would be Pracuj.pl in Poland, which is the number one player in Poland. And we also operate two largest websites in Ukraine, Robota UA and Work UA. So this is, let's say, the job classifieds part. And also since 15 years, we have been building the second part of our business, which is the software as a service within the HR. And we started in 2009 with a project called eRecruiter, which is the biggest ATS in Poland. 4 years ago, we also bought the the leading player in DACH region with a very strong German presence, Berlin-based Softgarden. And also we are, you know, doing some smaller acquisition in the post-hire space. So we don't only tackle the recruitment, but also we go into the, let's say, shift management, you know, benefits, different areas which are important from the perspective of the HR of the company. And it's a, as I said, we are a public company, 190 million euro, more or less last year, 1,150 employees. So that's already quite, at least according to the Polish standard, maybe not German ones, but quite a sizable business.
Well, from my perspective, it's still pretty big, actually. So congrats for your great Thank development you. And way. Let's talk a little bit about Poland and afterwards Ukraine. I mean, perhaps you can give us some explanation regarding the market in Poland. How do you see it at this point in time? It's very, very exciting times due to the geopolitical situation, but also to the economical situation. How is it in Poland these days?
No, I need to say, I always said that I'm really blessed that I was born, you know, in the mid-70s in Poland, which was still a communist country. I was 15 when the system changed, and I was, you know, witnessing all the changes, you know, collapse of the old system and the new economy being built. And I'm really impressed because when I look at what is happening right now, you know, Poland is probably one of the most shining examples of the economic growth of the last 35 years. I had the privilege of living abroad for 10 years. So I was living 5 years in Italy, from 2014 to 2019, and then 5 years in your country, in Germany. And I lived, you know, in Bavaria, in south of Munich. And I was always traveling, you know, to Poland, back, all because my business was always, I was not living there for work. I was living there just more like for the lifestyle. And it always amazed me how the differences kind of became smaller and smaller. Of course, it's very difficult to compare anything to Munich, which is a super, you know, rich and old style, you know, city. But I really enjoy Warsaw. I think I would always say Poland is like a new country, you know, because most of the things had not existed before. So if you come to Warsaw, lots of buildings are pretty much brand new. The services are new. You know, we have amazing infrastructure. I think probably we follow your example of Germany that, you know, probably I think 20 years ago we had maybe 400 kilometers of highways and express lanes. And right now we have about 5,000. So it's really amazing, you know, when you just come to what infrastructure was being built. I think also what is amazing is that there is this first generation culture in Poland. So we are all like myself. So we are the people who had nothing, pretty much, but, you know, made it up, and we didn't see any things which are not possible. And people are like very proactive, very entrepreneurial as well. And that's what has been building the economy for the last years. We always say, you know, the politicians, they should not disturb, you know, with the growth of the business. And we are trying as a business to push back about the regulations, deregulations, and so on. But there's lots of work being done. So I think Poland is doing very well. You know, I think this year is 3.5% GDP growth, lots of investments happening. We can also see it on the labor market. So I know that if you look at the Germany and, you know, other markets in the Western Europe, there are lots of troubles with the jobs, you know, companies are firing people, lots of examples like this. And I think the privilege of Poland is that we do not have one single like dominant industry. We are also not, let's say, there's no any symbiosis between the large companies like in Germany and the government, who was always supporting them historically. I think the government is trying to support lots of different businesses, trying not to stop into their way. And that's what probably helps us to build this entrepreneurship and grow. So this is talking about Poland.
All right, very interesting perspective. Let's switch to Ukraine, which is, from my perspective, even more interesting due to the war, obviously, and the situation over there. I spoke to someone, I can't remember right now who it was, who said to me, who was also doing business in the Ukraine, and said the last year was the best year for several years, and I was totally confused. But what's your perspective on Ukraine?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's so of course, on one hand, you have a country which is in the state of war. I mean, people are suffering, people are dying. On the other hand, people have to live. So, you know, the kids have to go to school, you know, people need to buy some products. And I mean, miraculously somehow, the economy and the country survived the first, you know, weeks or the first months. And so what we are seeing right now in our business is it's actually our fastest growing business in the group, which people do not believe how it's possible, because yes, everyone would say if there is a war, not much is happening. But the war is, you know, far in the east. And finally, the country itself, you know, Ukraine is really impressive because it's the largest country territory-wise in Europe, so it's really large, it's really immense. You know, they are protecting themselves, you know, and being successful with that. Of course, they get lots of support, financial support from the EU right now, not from the US anymore.
Especially this week, I mean.
Exactly. So there's lots of support. I think it's like a little bit like the IV for them, you know. They live on the IV, the economy is kind of functioning. And what happened quite interesting with the people is that, you know, the country was about 40 million people before the war, over 40 million, but lots of people left. We estimate there is probably about 30, 32 million people left in Ukraine. And out of these people, first of all, there is about 1 million which are involved in the military operations. Mm-hmm. Second of all, because lots of young people left, especially. Second of all, lots of people, especially the men, they are afraid of work because they don't want to be drafted. So that creates like a very big, you know, there is no like a demand supply, you know, proper curve. So there is a very big demand for the employees, but there is very limited supply as well. So I think from this perspective, the market is doing very well. So companies have to recruit and they have to invest a lot. And I think that's something which also starts happening in some other industries, because somehow with the current situation, companies see, okay, maybe we can see the light in the tunnel and the war will be over, maybe in 6 months, maybe in a year. And I know there is more and more interest in rebuilding Ukraine. Mm-hmm. There was a large event, I think 2 weeks ago in Poland, in the north. There was this Ukraine development, you know, kind of reconstruction conference with all people coming from all over the world, and there was much more positive mood about the country itself.
That's really fascinating, your perspectives here. Let's talk a little bit about the two areas you're in. At first, the job classifieds. I want to lay an emphasis later on the HR software topics, but the job classifieds to me is interesting because at least in Germany, we have this old discussion going on that in a few years, we don't need job boards anymore. It's a very old story, and it didn't happen so far and probably won't happen the next 5 years. But how do you see it? I mean, these are really major markets at the end of the day. So what are the key success factors for you?
So, I mean, I think people will, my understanding is that people will always look for some kind of job, and there will be always employees who will be needing people. So finally, the matching is necessary and it will need to happen. I think the job boards, especially in Europe, they have been the most successful in doing that for the last 25 years. And so I would say that it's not a question about, you know, whether people will be looking for a job or not, because they will. It's just the question, are they still going to use the job platforms?
Yes.
Or exactly. LinkedIn or Indeed or some other players? Or there will be some new forces emerging. Yeah? And by the new forces, we talk probably about the large language models, yes, LLMs. So this is, I think, that the discussion which is happening. I mean, my personal belief is that that will probably also depend on the job boards themselves, because we have to reinvent the way how we are looking into the matching. It's not so much about the number of candidates, more about, you know, find the proper matching and finding the quality ones. And I would say, as long as we have the brand, the reputation, and the tools, and the reason for the candidates to come to our platforms, I mean, we can exist for another, you know, 5, 10, 20, 50 years, you know. So that's probably not something that would worry me so much, assuming that we are able to go on this current wave. And obviously the question is how the LLMs will behave, because I think they are quite generalist. You know, I remember the time when Google was doing the Google jobs, so everyone was afraid that it's going to somehow bypass the us as the platforms. It did not happen. Could it happen with the LLMs? I think that would be very difficult, you know, because finally, people who are coming to the LLMs, they would need to express who they are looking for, what are they looking for, what skills they have, you know, with salaries, etc. So finally, what happens is more like it's actually about the data. So at the moment, who has the most data, the most accurate data for the candidates to choose the right employer and, you know, match them to the proper job. And I think, you know, we have, you know, people call about the so-called moat. So how much moat you have, how much data, etc. So I think the platforms, they need to become, and this is our transformation we went through, that when we started long time ago, we are more like a sales-driven organization. So there was a platform. The platform was good enough, but not outstanding.
There was reach.
That was the reach, going, you know, to the local offices, talking to the employers. So that's something which built the content for us. And we did, of course, marketing, TV, etc. But I think right now it's more and more about the technology. So I think that the job boards which will survive and which will be thriving are those who will be really fluent with the technology, and they'll be more like a product businesses, technology businesses, much more than the sales-driven organization, which should be there, but I would say in some way it would be the commodity because everyone does it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my view on the next years, and probably time will show which of them are able to adapt.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I mean, we have our own job boards in the apprenticeship market with Ausbildung.de, for instance, and our strategy is really to include AI into the job board. So to really make it as a product that provides the best matching and the best experience for someone looking for a job, especially for their own needs, for their own individual needs. So that's what it's.
Yeah, if you have, you know, the right technology, I think there's so much data, and if you have good people, they will be able to find out what are not only maybe about jobs, which is the matching, but also lots of other things. You know, if they come, they can probably leave some data, get all the kind of maybe opinion about their perspective. Maybe they can be connected to some websites about the education. So maybe they would suggest some career paths as well. You know, this is all the things which I remember we have been talking about for the last 20 years, but there had been no technology that would enable us to do it.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's switch topics more regarding the recruitment software, regarding the software as a service business that you also provide, and which is super interesting, but which is also under pressure, also coming from the AI developments. How do you look at this area?
Yeah, I think it's you know, I think there will be probably the two words. Yes, I think there will be some companies which will be, especially those which have lots of data inside, it will be very difficult, you know, to copy them somehow, you know. So you have software like payroll, for example, you know, there is lots of data, it's sensitive, it's very, you know, regulations connected, and it's not something that will be very easy replace, I would say. On the other hand, you can have some more like a more simple task where, you know, building the solutions could be easier. We do it ourselves. When I look at Grupa Pracuj, you know, our teams are building some small features which help us to, you know, streamline some, you know, HR workflows, some processes and so on. But, you know, it's difficult to say, you know, who is going to be the winner, who is going to be the loser. for sure, what we see is that that it's much easier, you know, to build the product right now. So when we think about, for example, our product, whether it's the job classifier or SaaS, we say this is the core, which is more complicated, regulated. But all the new features, all the new products around, you know, we pretty much put the teams to, and they do it, you know, 5 or 10 times faster for the I know fraction of the price before. And so there is opportunities. But would I be so optimistic about all these new AI startups coming up? I mean, I don't know, yeah, because I think I think at the current times it's easier to build the product. It's probably easier to sell it. I think the question is also about the cost of doing that, because AI is not cheap and you have to pay lots of money for that. And I think so that basically questions the sustainability of the model itself. Also, we are asking, for example, when talking about the software that we are playing, which is the recruitment software, we always, you know, think that, you know, first of all, we have lots of very sensitive data about the candidates, about the recruitment. I think right now in the AI Act, you know, recruitment is selected as one of these very sensitive areas. Yes. So it's not really kind of, I think, so people, companies should be very careful about that. And finally, you know, if you pay, I don't know, 300 euro in Poland per month for the system, or you pay, I don't know, 800, 1000 Germany per month, is there so much incentive, you know, to switch to some other systems, which may be cheaper potentially, but they are not well integrated with the other players on the market. They don't have the multi-posting. They don't have the credibility as well. I think the time will show it, but we just don't see at this moment, you know, anywhere where we are acting AI being playing a larger role. I think it's probably US is always in the forefront. So there is probably lots of things happening. And of course, it will. So for, I think there will be more teams, better products, more competitive, but there is much more than just product itself and how cheap you build it. Plus, you know, how much you are going to pay for these agents and, you know, other solutions there. So I think it's too early to say. I think, but I would tend to agree to say that, of course, there will be the winners and there will be the losers. And I think if people are running the SaaS businesses, of course, we have to go with the AI. We have to use it as in terms of the job classifiers, as the opportunity for the new products. In our case, for the employers, because I think we can go much farther into the recruitment process. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we are discussing. That's something that we are building at the moment to provide more value for the employers.
Yeah, and I would agree, and I would to emphasize one point. With all these legacy products, you have one big advantage, which is at the end of the day, if you have a great product, it's brand trust, and it's an existing customer base. Because you can have a great new product, but you have to gain customers, you have to gain trust, and that obviously takes time. It doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I mean, we already, like a few years ago, when we measured the Pracuj.pl kind of how well we know, you know, in this, you know, we discovered 99% of people using internet in Poland, they know Pracuj.pl. So it's a very strong brand. And I think it's also a very trusted brand. Mm-hmm. What you said, right? That if you are able to do it, I think it's even more important in Germany. I think the trust, the compliance with the data, the safety, the security, this is probably the one of these features which are very, very important when making the selection decisions.
Yeah, you could say if you make it in Germany, you can make it anywhere. To quote Frank Sinatra in a different way.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. And I think what we talk right now about is digital. I mean, the one thing I wanted to add about Poland is that Poland actually became quite a digitalized country. And sometimes when I talk to my friends in Germany about what solutions are available in Germany, you know, for us in Poland, and even more in Ukraine, because I think actually Ukraine is the extreme example, because of the war and because of the spread of the people, they have their solution called GIA, which is, as I read recently, is like the most, is used by the highest number of people as a percentage of the population in the world. And it's amazing because you have everything there, you know, it's like, you know, probably like the Chinese solution is even better. But also in Poland, you know, we have something which is called like M-Citizen, like a mobile citizen. So, for example, if you go in Poland, you don't need to have a physical document. You don't need the ID. You don't need the driving license. You can see lots of data about, you know, what properties you own. If you have a car crash, you know, you talk to the other person, you do everything online and it goes into the system automatically. It's actually quite amazing, you know, how much time is being spent on the digitalization of the economy and probably how much money it saves.
That makes totally sense. And obviously Germany is on its way, but way too slow in these things. I hope that there will be a big step forward within the next 2 years or something like that.
That would always surprise me, you know, because whenever I talk to my friends, you know, in Grunewald, then I think people know what should be done, yeah, and they always believe that the new person who comes, they will do these changes, but finally it doesn't happen. So I don't know, maybe something cultural, you know.
It might have something to do with the German mentality to always be 100% secure, and obviously if you do something new, there is no 100% security. Yeah, but that's a different story. Let's talk a little bit about the future for Grupa Pazui. What do you have in mind? Where do you want to lead the company?
So, you know, that's what we discussed, you know, quite extensively, and we have something which we called Grupa Pazui 2030 strategy. So it's still, you know, four and a half years to go. We, you know, the vision is to be the leading agile technology platform in Europe. So we actually like Europe. I know lots of people have, you know, maybe some questions or doubts, but I think we believe that it's because it's probably so fragmented, because it's so different as well. It's quite an interesting, you know, space to play. And the way we would like to do it, you know, we want to, you know, follow this strategy of these two legs. So one would be the one pillar would be the job classifiers. The other one would be software as a service. We would like to obviously grow with our, you know, with our products, which probably depends also on the economy, on the market, on the situation in Europe. We would like to do some acquisitions as well. I think SoftGarden 4 years ago was the largest so far. And also it showed us, you know, that it always takes time, you know, to kind of integrate the company. And I think living in Germany is a very different to working in Germany. So that's also, but it's for every market. When we look at when we talk to the people in Ukraine, Poland, Germany, we are all different. And that's the whole beauty about how we can, on which values, on what basis we can build the business together. And so I think there will be some, you know, apart from our current growth, which is those two pillars, there will be some acquisitions happening. We are not like a company which is like where acquisitions is the DNA. We would probably do maybe one every 1, 2, 3 years. We try, right, especially right now in the current market circumstances, where the valuations went down about 40% in the last year because of the AI threat. And I think the private companies, quite many of them are not willing to sell for the right price because they believe the prices will go back. So right now we are more focused on the so-called bolt-on acquisitions, which is doing more like a smaller projects for market consolidation and so on. So that's what our team is working on. But, you know, we have, as I said, we had about 190 or 80 million euro last year. We would like to get to, by 2030, we would like to get to, I think, about 300 million more or less on the basis of the current growth. So that's how we look into. And honestly, you know, looking right now 4 or 5 years ahead is tough.
Ambitious.
We did a plan. I remember we did planning. So usually the way we plan, we start our planning process in September and we have the plans for the next year in November. So we start quite late comparing to other companies, but that's because this additional 2 or 3 months, they always gave us much more information. So we just squeezed the process a little bit. And then I remember when we talked end of February with our supervisory board, we just realized that with all these AI developments and the changes on the market, I think we have to adapt, you know. So that's why I would say it's more like the vision where we go, kind of aspirations, but then we have to be very careful, look at the market, you know, be agile, be curious, learn, adapt, shape sometimes, then that's probably, there is no other choice. We don't know what's going to happen in 4 years.
Absolutely. All right. It was a pleasure talking to you. Very interesting what you described about Poland, the Ukraine, also strategy of Grupa Pracuj. I'm totally impressed. I'm pretty sure that this was not the last talk we had here today, because I'm super keen to know what will happen with your group in the next 2 years. So thank you for taking the time, Jemek. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you, Gero. You know, I really appreciated our time, and also congratulations on what you are doing, you know, with your group. I think it's really fantastic. We are following the same kind of path, I would say, you know,
very just maybe
a little bit different geographies and with a little bit different audience.
Yes.
But I think, you know, what I am feeling, and I can probably empathetically understand all the issues you are facing.
I guess so. All right. Let's talk in the future again, and have a nice day.
Thank you.
So, das war diese Saatkorn-Podcast-Episode. Ich hoffe, dir hat Spaß gemacht und sie hat dir gefallen. Bevor ich jetzt hier rausgehe, noch ein kleiner Tipp für dich. Abonniere doch kostenlos meinen Saatkorn-Newsletter. Dann gibt's jeden Sonntag alle Podcasts, alle News, alle Artikel, alle Verlosungen, alles, was ich auf Saatkorn so mache, gratis in dein Mail-Postfach, und du hast bequem alles an einem Ort und verpasst nichts mehr. Das Ganze kostet, wie gesagt, nichts. Den Link zum Abo gibt's in den Shownotes. Würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns da wieder treffen. Ganz lieben Dank und bis bald. Ciao.